This is Bondi Tunes International, the week that was.
This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, and I've been joined by Thomas Booker in San Antonio de Bayar in Texas and Ronan Seagrave in Winnipeg in Canada. And we started our discussion about current events in Canada.
The culmination today of a sort of a week-long protest by truckers in Canada. And I want to stress here, this is a minority of truckers. The national organization representing truckers in Canada has completely condemned this and disassociated itself, and also that over 85% of truckers are double vaccinated. So this is a minority of truckers who've organized sort of a week-long convoy going coast to coast in Canada. In fact, I encountered it directly, Henry, on Tuesday, Wednesday. I had to go downtown to sign some papers, and myself and Lisa on the way back, they decided to sort of congregate in a sort of truck stop gas station very near where we live. So we were sort of stuck in this for over an hour, and it was actually quite disturbing. This has been sort of hijacked by hard right, and just to be blunt about it, the racist element here. There were sort of Nazi signs comparing Justin Trudeau to a Nazi, a Star of David on one truck.
Oh my God!
It's a very, very anti-Semitic, and it's been hijacked by these, as I said, this very sort of hard alt-right minority who are not just. And the issue, the specific issue that led to this is the imposition of vaccine mandates or passports by both the Canadian federal government and the US government. So if you're a trucker traveling into the US, the US immigration will look for and require validation of double vaccinated as a trucker. If you're not, you'll be turned back. And similarly, if you cross back from the US into Canada, the Canadian Border Services will also require proof of double vaccination. And again, if the truckers aren't able to provide that, they're turned back. But it's been hijacked by, as I say, this hard alt-right, people who support the People's Party. And they're basically opposed to all public health measures, you know, masks and sort of restrictions and lockdowns and things like that.
Now, Thomas, you mentioned that there's Americans there as well.
Oh yeah, there. I heard that there were several American truckers. Not several. There were quite a few American truckers joining that protest and lending a hand to it. Which is, this is.
Who would have been required to be double vaccinated?
Just to be clear. I know it's. But you know, it has nothing to do with. You know, Canada, I mean, this is a widespread protest against prudent measures for a public health emergency, and it's being exploited at the wazoo by our domestic fascists here in the United States. And I'm afraid the a fleet of truckers in Canada are picking up on it too, and just making a protest for protest's sake. But it's the demands, the complaints that they have are absolutely silly and inane.
They're not going to happen. I mean, Trudeau is not. First of all, the only one thing that really does relate to Trudeau is the border and the vaccine passports. Other public health measures are matters of provincial governments. So it's nothing really to do with Trudeau. I mean, the other things that happened today, Trudeau and his family. Trudeau actually is currently isolated.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you where is Trudeau?
No. He was taken by his RCMP security detail to an undisclosed location. The other thing that happened today, I think, really shocked me and most Canadians. Number one was that a number of trucks decided to park at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Now, that would be considered a particularly sacred place in Canada. And, you know, that has caused outrage. A second outrage was a statue of somebody called Terry Fox. Now, Terry Fox was a young man who died of cancer in when he was 22 in the 1970s, and he only had one leg, but he did, before he died, an amazing sort of cross-country Canada marathon raising funds. So Terry Fox is a revered figure, and his statue is there outside Parliament, and that was defaced. Putting on anti-vaccine, anti-public health measure signs on it, and that really shocked people. Mm. And then a further incident, there's a very large shopping centre in the centre of Ottawa called the Davido Centre, and that was forced to close. It was basically besieged by protesters, none of whom were wearing masks. So they had really no alternative, given there's a mask mandate there, they had no alternative but to close. So I think, you know, we're in danger of sort of blowing this out of proportion. I think the truth of this is, you know, Thomas is right. This is seen as a hard right, small minority in Canada. All of the opinion polls show Canadians are in favour of public health measures. That the province of Quebec, which has imposed the strongest measures, the Premier has never been as popular.
I was going to say that it's very un-Canadian, Brunan.
Yes.
It is. Yes, it is.
It's more American than Canadian.
That's what bothers me.
Yes.
We do have similar to the US, though we think not in the same scale. You know, there's a Canadian chapter of the Proud Boys. Always has been a hard right minority. Some of the provinces, particularly the prairies where I live, are the Winnipeg tends to flip-flop between right and left-wing governments, but certainly Saskatchewan and Alberta are pretty sort of conservative territory. And, you know, let's be blunt about this. At the heart of this is a lot of ignorance.
Of course.
You know, lots of people say, yes, not sure about the vaccines, not sure that we don't get enough information. My God, you just have to Google it. The planet's given out over 10 billion shots. I think if there was a massive problem, we'd know about it now. But what we do know is what COVID-19 can do, and it can kill people, and it can make people very sick. And if you're unvaccinated, you can end up in hospital on a ventilator. That we do know. So there's a lot of that kind of ignorance around this that's distressing. But most Canadians are not ignorant, and a vast majority of Canadians are fully vaccinated.
Thomas Booker in Texas, do you think that I have to ask you both this, is the education system better in Canada than America?
What you're talking about. I think public education is probably better. The sort of elementary, middle and high, you know, they hasn't had what I think, Thomas can correct me, it hasn't had kind of the slashing of budgets that perhaps has occurred in the US. I think when you look at universities, I think that's a totally different conversation. You know, I think every Canadian would sort of recognize that Yale, Harvard, Stanford, Berkeley would be considered kind of superior institutions, notwithstanding the fact Canada has excellent universities. So I think it really depends what part of education you're talking about.
It's a little bit complicated here right at the moment.
Can I tell you a funny story? In 1980, when I was a young fella, I was on Pirate Radio, which never paid me at the time, as you would know, Ronan, before and over. And I was
the one before him. Yeah,
I was working at McDonald's, and to pay my rent while I was working on these little tiny radio stations to kind of get some experience. And McDonald's made me a swing manager. Now, that's like half a manager. And they offered me to do a course in It was in McDonald's.
You could do a degree. Called Hamburger University.
That's it. That's the one I'm talking about.
I think that was done by the Film Board of Canada umpteen zillion years ago.
Is that right?
Where they did a documentary there about Hamburger University, and I saw it. Oh, God, this is like 60 years ago or something. We used to get a lot of CBC documentaries and programming down here on our public television station.
Sorry, Ron?
CBC is still doing this. And in another very strange twist to this, Jagmeet Singh, who is the leader of the sort of left-wing National Democratic Party, or NDP, currently on paternity leave, But Jagmeet Singh's brother-in-law, it was discovered, made a donation of $13,000 in a GoFundMe page or that was set up in support of the truckers. And clearly this was something Jagmeet could have really done without, because clearly he'd be from the complete opposite end of the spectrum. And in fact, the whole GoFundMe page has become mired in controversy when actually the person who set it up is from a splinter hard right, I suppose, quasi-fascist kind of party. And it wasn't terribly clear where this money was going, if you know what I mean. Whether, you know, she was saying it was going to truckers' families and this kind of thing. That wasn't very... might it be going to this political party, for example?
Okay, I just wanted to do a station ID. This is Bondi Tunes International Broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry on a very hot and windy Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia. My cat is meowing in the background because he wants to get out, but he doesn't get to go out until 5 o'clock. So if you hear a cat meowing, it's my cat.
Well, that's the cat meowing.
Joe Biden's got a cat now. Did you read that?
Sorry?
Joe Biden's got a cat.
Oh, yes. This is good on Joe.
The first cat of the White House since George W. Bush. The cat is called Willow, and apparently it's a farm cat that Jill Biden, the first lady, encountered some time ago. So there was apparently a bit of work to do to make sure that the cat would settle into the White House, but it moved in.
Okay.
First feline.
I just forgot to mention who I'm talking to. Thomas Booker's in Texas, San Antonio de Bayar, and Ronan Seagraver's in Canada. And I just want to talk about something to do with this whole virus and, you know, the jabs and all that stuff. I got a RAT test, a rapid antigen test, for anyone in the world who doesn't know, which I think everyone does. And I came up negative, but I was already sick. So my girlfriend, Caroline, she said, I think what's happened is you got COVID, but the symptoms wore off or something, and when you did the test, it was negative. And my other question to you both is, are these RAT tests reliable? Because I'm as sick as hell. You
know, they're not as reliable as a PCR, a molecular sort of, the swab up the nose and molecular analysis in the laboratory. That's about well into the high 90s in terms of accuracy. Antigens, depending on the less sort of accurate ones can be as low as sort of 50-60%. But generally, they're around 75% accurate. The other factor, Henry, is your timing of it.
And I was going to say, are people doing things right with these antigen tests?
But I think people probably are just. A lot depends when they do it. So, for example, you can have COVID and test negative. And that just has to do of when you're exposed in your viral load. We also get people who test positive where it's just dead virus.
Do they go out of date, these RAT tests?
I honestly know. I suspect they probably do have a sort of, by the day. I mean, the big problem with rapid antigen tests is actually people getting their hands on them. I think you did well to get one, Henry.
You know what? I was ahead of... We were ahead of the game because I went down to Bondi Beach where they had this big setup, you know, to get tested in your car. But the lines were going back a mile right up to North Bondi. So we realised that this was... Caroline's very smart. We realised this was coming and we managed 30 seconds... I'm 30 seconds away from a chemist. And I went in there and managed to... I paid $60, so $12 for... $60 for five, $12 each. So we were very lucky because, as you both would know, Australia's had a dreadful distribution problem with these tests.
You've been making it perfectly clear, Henry.
Yes, on social media, for sure. Yes.
I've got a couple in the house. I mean, I may have to go to... Edmonton on a plane. I'll probably just take one before I go, just to be on the safe side. Lisa managed to pick up a couple again, like you, Henry, just sort of randomly from a pharmacist. They are actually quite in short supply. Yeah.
Are they in short supply in America and Canada, or is this just an Australian thing? And
we now have a web page that's been established by the Biden at the direction of the Biden administration. So now every citizen can apply for. I don't think it's a RAT test, though. I'm not sure what it's the other test that we get. But you can have. I'm not sure if they haven't really called it the rat test. They just said they were making these available. I need to ask my wife because the first thing she did was order them. No questions asked. But what I'm saying is that there is now a federal distribution plan, and it's apparently fairly efficient because people are getting kits. I'm hearing about that all over the place, and it's delivered to your doorstep.
Mm. So is it free?
It's free. For the purposes of controlling the pandemic. So it's perfectly reasonable and perfectly sensible thing for a government to do.
Ronan, in Canada, does the same apply?
It depends. If you go to a testing center, and unless actually you're Omicron basically collapsed the entire sort of testing system in Canada, because we're just thousands of people sort of descending on testing centers. So the only people who get PCR tests, publicly funded, are sort of healthcare workers or the kind of frontline workers, where that's kind of really important. If you turn up as sort of, Joe Blow, and you're not in those categories, if they have them, they'll give you an antigen test. But actually the direction changed to, if you've got symptoms, just stay home, self-isolate, don't even try and get tested, please don't go near a testing center, we need to just preserve all of this for frontline workers, and just stay home and self-isolate. And we are seeing this shift, which I think we're seeing shift globally. Omicron was kind of game changer in that, because it is just so contagious, unless we went into months and months of lockdown, we can't compress it. So some provinces here have taken measures such as, shutting bars and restaurants and things like that for a while.
There's another variant called B22 or something that's just come out.
It's a sub-variant of Omicron. It's believed to be even more contagious.
I was going
to
say.
However, it's not believed to have any... it doesn't make you more sick than Omicron, and Omicron was milder than... Delta, Alpha, Beta, or the original native strain. So it is an issue, but not one at the moment that is causing major concern. I think the other thing that happened in Canada, which I think has happened in the US, is that the Pfizer antiviral drug has been approved, and they've started shipping to pharmacies. That's another game changer in terms of, if you're feeling a bit unwell, remember your family can just pop out and get these pills, and they seem to be incredibly effective again at reducing hospital.
That's really good news, because with these rat tests, a lot of people aren't using them properly, as far as I understand. With a pill, you just take the pill.
I do know, Henry, which might be sort of part of the answer to this, is that various sort of people are working on smartphone apps around this. Just as you can get sort of a smartphone app for sort of like a breathalyzer test, people are looking at an app whereby you just need to use your phone and an app and a kind of simple little attachment to your phone, and that whether this will work or not, Henry, I have no idea.
But
I do get thinking in terms of, just making a product that's kind of mass consumption available.
Gosh, okay. I just want to let our listeners know that my cat is going nuts in the background, and I have a very sensitive microphone. So
I know how you feel.
Do you really want to let her out? Is it safe for her to go outside?
Oh, it's dodgy. There's a big black cat out, in the back garden, and they sit in front of each other and have these stare-offs because they're both fighting over territory, but they haven't attacked each other yet.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend's at a birthday party at the moment, which I'm supposed to be at, but I'm not sure if I'm positive or negative. I don't trust the rat test. Right, now, I want to ask you about sport. Ronan, I know you're into sport. Thomas, I don't know if you are or not, but
Well, we're going to talk about it. Hang on a second, Henry.
Okay. Oh, a beer! Oh, it's 4:15 in the afternoon. I think I can handle that.
You should do that, and we're going to talk sports here. That's how we talk about them in Texas.
Oh, that's the way they do. Excuse me. Two words. Ash Barty, who has won the Australian...
Yeah, it was my grade, I mean.
Do you know who about this?
Yes, no, I do. I mean, I've seen her play, and I know she won, I think, the French Open last year as well.
She
did. I think, in fact, she's holding all of them. I think she won Wimbledon as well. I think she's holding all of them.
Now she's got Australia. And it's the first time that a woman has won the Australian Open in 44 years. I mean, this girl is amazing. She's working class. She's from a rural place in Queensland, and she's so down to earth. I felt so sorry for the American girl whose name escapes me, because I watched this live last night. Sorry?
Collins, I think. Yeah, I haven't really heard of her either, to be honest.
Yeah, well, she did a great speech at the end, but she was really pissed off. But it was just a lovely story. Now, what else? Now, I haven't prepped this because I've been quite sick, and I just saw you both talking online, and I thought, I'm going to jump on this, regardless of my situation. So I don't really know what else. Have you guys got other subjects to talk about?
I'm actually steamed about something right at the moment.
Go for it.
Well, if you if you look at my page, I just saved George Takei just posted about it.
Oh, what did he say?
Well, he wrote a graphic novel, or it wasn't a graphic novel, it was a graphic memoir in cartoon form about his detention in the camps during World War II.
Of course.
And he just found out that his book has been banned at school libraries. There's
in America, you mean, yeah?
In the United States of America, what's going on right now, this is what the far right wing is doing. I'm going to call them the fascists. The American fascists are in the process of scaring up any and all kind of hysteria as they can, along with the virus, the coronavirus, and misinformation about that, and misinformation about vaccinations. And just to host, and I even have some relatives who every now and then we hear from who are quoting a lot of this misinformation. Mm. Also, the Rupert Network in America, otherwise known as Fox News, has had some reporters compare Anthony Fauci to Joseph Mengele.
Crazy.
With that, there is a movement now afoot among a bunch of far-right fascists in states, different states, Texas being one of them, who are going on a book banning spree. And they're demanding that high schools disclose their inventory of certain books, and they send them titles of interest and require schools, public schools. And they're also planning on going after libraries to remove these particular books. And,
this sounds like the Second World War to me.
It sounds like Nazi Germany.
The book burning.
Weimar Republic. Yes, it sounds exactly like that. And there are all kinds. There's a book called A Light in the Attic, which is a memoir about Anne Frank hiding out, nearby. Of course, Anne Frank's book has been banned. And the most ironic of
that's
all.
That's ridiculous.
Fahrenheit 451 has been banned. they're trying to have that removed from the libraries.
I just want to bring in some, an issue here about political correctness, right? And how it's doing all this and all the bannings of so many ridiculous, stuff that may be out of date, but it's historical, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I just watched a video of Bill Maher, who's a TV talk show, nighttime talk show host on HBO. And what's interesting here is that he's knocking the hell out of the lip. Here's the funny thing, Ronan. Fox News has said that he should run for president because all of a sudden they think he's on their side. They don't get it.
Yes, that sounds like
in a similar vein, a story here in Canada, and I think it's probably making the news in Australia and US, which is a Spotify row. Mm-hmm. And Spotify being the music stream, also podcasting streaming service. And this all started with a podcast between a guy called Joe Rogan, who's definitely in the category Thomas was talking about.
Sorry to interrupt you. I've got to put this cat in the bedroom, so you guys just keep talking to yourselves, okay? Talk to each other.
Joe Rogan had a recent podcast also involving a Canadian academic called Jordan Peterson, written a kind of controversial book, 12 Rules for Life. But the podcast was kind of bizarre in that Jordan decided, for whatever reason, to wear a tuxedo. Joe Rogan was much more casually attired in a T-shirt. Mm-hmm. But the podcast started off with a bizarre conversation around climate change. And, of course, Jordan was sort of denouncing that as even valid mm-hmm. and saying, well, it's many factors. Well, actually, no, scientists have kind of narrowed it down to very specific factors because that's what scientists do. Mm-hmm. And then even more strangely, both of these men, as we both know, Thomas are white, decided to talk about how people identify as black, yes. as if they had any knowledge of their expertise. But anyway, this was too much for Canadian singer, I think he also has dual nationality in the US passport, but a Canadian icon, the singer Neil Young,
mm-hmm.
who
yes.
added that Spotify, and apparently this is half his income.
Joni Mitchell's also pulling it.
Joni Mitchell, another Canadian, is yeah. also pulled to write. And I think Niels Lofgren, who's another US artist, he's also pulling his music. I'm just wondering how far this might go.
If it hurts Spotify, I don't know. I mean, but basically what they're doing is they're pulling all their media out of there, everything they've ever done that Spotify might be wanting to, you know, showcase. And it's a movement among these actors who are standing up to this outrage. I have to call it an outrage. It is. So I'm fortunate. Fortunately, there are some people in the United States who have enough backbone to act on things like this and react to it. But I haven't watched Bill Maher yet. But
it's on my timeline. I gotta tell you, it was the best. What do they call it? Monologue. That I've heard yes. him do in all the years. It was excellent, and it's really smart what he's done. He says that, you know, everyone thinks that he's a lefty, and in fact he is, and he says he is. He said, I'm just a pot-smoking lefty. But he hasn't got enough. He's just so pissed off with the Liberals and the Democrats.
Mm-hmm. I am too.
And he's knocking the hell out of them. Please go to my timeline and watch that video that I've put up of him from last mm-hmm. night. Okay, if you've just joined us, I'm Henry from Bond.Tunes with a very noisy cat, and Ronan Seagrave is in Canada, and Thomas Booker is down in Texas. what else is going on in the world, guys? Because I've been out of touch.
Well, I guess Ronan.
Ronan.
We could talk about Vladimir Putin and Ukraine.
Oh, yes. What
is old Vlad up to? I mean, there's two schools of thought here. One, it's a bluff, and that he's doing this and has massed all these troops on the border with Ukraine to get concessions. Mm-hmm. I mean, the opening position that Ukraine can never join NATO, and going back to 1997, mm-hmm. that troop deployments I don't think is going to happen, but he may get something.
Isn't it interesting? Sorry to interrupt you, Ronan. Isn't it just to let our listeners know, what's happening, Ukraine is next to Russia, but the countries like Belarus and other countries are surrounding the Ukraine, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, and as you say, they want Ukraine, well, Europe wants, or the world wants Ukraine to join them, and this is yes. a balance of power of all things, isn't it?
Yeah, well, this is, it Belarus is compliant with Russia. I mean, it's kind of like a toady to Putin. Mm. So he's, of course, hosting a lot of the Putin's military force intrusion.
Ronan, I interrupted you. Sorry about that.
The second school of thought is in the U.S. intelligence, but it has to be taken seriously, is that he might invade. Now, it may be mm-hmm. more of an incursion, for example, seizing mm-hmm. sort of Eastern Ukraine, declaring that as part of the motherland. If he was to launch a sort of full-scale invasion, and you know they believe he's continuing to mass troops there, he's brought in the type of weaponry, which was really why the US rushed a lot of deadly weaponry into Ukraine as a deterrent. But he could, in a lightning move, take Kiev. But there's no doubt about it, especially with Western support, which will be indirect. They're not going to send troops into Ukraine, but they will send weaponry and other things. Mm. It would be a long, bloody war. And I'm not sure whether Vladimir Putin wants that. And, you know, Russian mothers seeing their sons sent back in body bags from Ukraine, because it would be a long and bloody war.
Yeah.
The Ukrainians would fight back and would fight back for a very long time, even if Putin succeeded in putting up a pro-Russian regime. So I think one of two things will happen. Number one, Putin will get, for now, sufficient concessions and sort of pull back from the brink. The second thing is that he could make an incursion and seize, you know, I'm supporting, you know, the Russian freedom fighters in eastern Ukraine. I'm coming in, as I did in Crimea, to seize that and to make sure that that remains under Russian protection. Now, that, however, could still provoke what has been threatened as the most sort of brutal economic sanctions, including Putin himself being sanctioned, and removing the Russian ruble from international and global money markets. And it's going to have a very, very severe impact on the Russian economy.
There's a lot,
my guess is
sorry, yes.
that he won't invade. That he won't invade. Mm.
Yeah, a lot of war games going on.
I have another take. I also kind of think that one of the things Putin wants to do is destabilize the American political situation and destabilize Biden and in terms of presenting this threat, presenting a distraction to him in terms of trying to recover the public. And I have been hearing that Fox News correspondents have been complaining that Biden is too sympathetic to Ukraine, which is bizarre.
Well, that is bizarre.
He might be sympathetic to a democratically elected government as opposed to Putin. I mean, I've heard that. I've seen some of those clips. Why are we...
Ronan, I thought Russia was a democracy.
Yeah. I think the expression is rigged election. You know, I think Putin was probably taken aback a bit when Biden rushed a lot of that deadly weaponry, munitions. That's enough for anyone to think twice, because that means a lot of dead Russians, Russian soldiers. So I think the other thing that Biden's doing that is smart, along with European allies, is really bolstering defense in the Baltic states. So by putting in more troops, by making it really clear to Putin that is an absolute, they're NATO members, that is a line you can't cross, and of course the potential for a conflict to go nuclear, which I can assure everybody Vladimir Putin does not want.
Ronan, did you hear something about Europe also threatening Putin with not buying gas, like cutting off the supply from Gazprom?
Yeah, there's one pipeline that comes out of Russia that the market is Europe right into the UK and possibly even Ireland getting supplied by that pipeline, Henry and Thomas. The Russians had agreed a deal with Germany for a second pipeline, which actually the Biden government doesn't like the fact that they agreed that deal. And actually Germany has made it clear they're not going to send weaponry or anything else to Ukraine. There is a possibility that of the existing pipeline, the Russians could turn it off. That wouldn't mean, you know, people suddenly freezing to death in their houses. You would be able to source gas elsewhere, but the price would soar.
I just want to talk about the Second World War for a sec, which is related to this. Japan, of course, was at war with everyone. they surrounded Australia. They were a menace in Australia. They were a menace everywhere. After they lost the war, they changed from war to trade and finance. And that's their war, and they're very powerful in that. I'm wondering, with Russia, are they going to shoot themselves in the foot with this pipeline and trade with the West? Will they shoot themselves in the foot, or will they learn like Japan did, they had a war?
I think it's the great tragedy, the fundamental tragedy about Putin taking charge of Russia, is that after the fall of the Soviet Union, there was this window of opportunity in there I think in general Russian culture harbors and nourishes some really brilliant thinking even when they were commies, but they had a very well-educated populace. They were all literate, and they had very good scientists and very good financial people. And all of that kind of got subverted, and I'm curious to find out why. I thought Russia would kind of explode into this creative, progressive society with all the heritage that they had.
Just like Japan did.
Yeah, I was thinking that would be the thing that the course.
And Germany,
and they would have seen all of these things happening in Europe and Japan, but, and all of these cultures that were turned around.
I'm just wondering how long Boris not Boris. Yeah, no, Boris. We're going to talk about Boris in a minute.
No, we're not talking about Boris.
But Putin, you see, this is what happens when you think you have COVID, but maybe you don't. But how long has Putin been in power? Do any of you guys know?
It must be. He did, I think, 2 terms as president, then handed over to a puppet, Medvedev, who's now the prime minister. On and off for over 20 years. And he's, I think, changed the constitution or something to sort of remain in power, frankly, as long as he wants. You could ask one question, though, about Russia. Can anyone name an innovative product that comes from Russia?
That's it, yes. There's a problem there. Other than not malware.
What they have is natural resources, like natural gas, and they spend enormous parts, so like some of the Soviet Union days, enormous parts of their economy are for military and defense. There's a great saying, the old Russian saying, we might not have much, but we've got an army and a navy. And Putin has plowed billions of dollars into developing sort of more advanced nuclear weapons, into essentially modernizing his armed forces. But actually, when you look at it, and Putin knows this, if you still compare Russian military forces to NATO, it's a slam dunk for NATO. And Putin knows that. And to be getting involved in any kind of wider conflict, it's suicidal. He doesn't want that. But what he does want, and what Putin has always dreamed about, is restoring the glory of the Soviet Union.
But
spheres of influence, really in Eastern Europe and indeed the Baltics, that they should be under Russian influence.
Yes. As opposed That's why he invaded Ukraine or seized...
Okay.
Because of...
I'm sorry.
Ukraine was planning on joining the European Union, and that outraged him way back when.
So that's not a new thing. If you've just joined us, I'm Henry for Bondi Tunes International Broadcasting from Sydney in Australia, where it's stinking hot and the beach is packed. And I'm talking with Ronan Seagrave in Winnipeg in Canada and Thomas Booker in San Antonio de Bayard, which I always do in a French accent for some reason, in Texas.
Go ahead. Six Flags over Texas. One of them was French.
Oh, fair enough. now, I want to ask you both, if Boris Johnson, who is the British Prime Minister, asked you over for drinks at number 10, would you accept?
I've been to a lot of parties where they tell you to bring your own.
Bring your own booze.
Yeah, bring your own booze.
Ronan, how damaging is this?
There are two things going on here that are interrelated. I mean, as listeners will know, this is about parties that happened at number 10 Downing Street during lockdowns and public health restrictions in England. It was a garden party which Boris Johnson was photographed at, and the kind of excuse was, well, number one, it started that there weren't any. Yes, there were, but Boris Johnson wasn't there. Now Boris Johnson has at least been at several of them.
But they were actually work events.
They weren't parties. They were just there working, some wine.
There's pictures of this, and Boris is there, and there's glasses of friggin' wine. I mean, what kind of party is that?
And then, of course, there was the birthday party cake incident, where apparently on Boris Johnson's birthday in June 2020, at the height of the lockdown, a group of people came into his office with a cake and sung happy birthday. Mm-hmm. And that is also being seen. And then
that's on video.
I think the worst one, they're all awful and this should never have happened. Mm. That's self-evident. It was that Boris Johnson apparently was not at this, but there apparently was one the night before Prince Philip's funeral. And I think people will remember
that's right.
Images of the Queen in tears, sitting on her own and fully complying.
What a famous image and sad image is that of her by herself, sitting alone at her husband's funeral.
Yeah, and I think the two things that are happening now is there's an inquiry, as the brave British way of doing it. So they've got a very senior servant, one of the Du Grey. By the way, the person who was originally the cabinet secretary, who was originally leading the inquiry, he too apparently was at one of the parties, so he had to step down. And Sue Grey has taken over, a very senior civil servant. That matters, though, that through her investigation, have now also been passed to the Metropolitan Police. So now folk are wondering, well, will her report be published next week, or will parts of it have to be held back because it might be prejudicial to a police investigation? And of course, people are very suspicious that Boris Johnson might be terribly keen for parts of this never to get into the public domain. He's going through the ride it out, you know, apologising and you know, trying to hang on to his job. We'll find out whether that is successful. I have to admit, I have met Boris Johnson.
How special for you, Ronan?
Well, it happened some years ago when he was mayor of London. I mean, actually, if you told me that time, the guy that was prime minister, I'd have just laughed you out of the room. But all I can say was I was doing a piece of work for my employers, which was a very large global consulting company, where we were engaged by the mayor of London to do some work for him. And I was part of that work, and I ended up in a couple of meetings with him and his deputy mayors. And my recollections of him was basically he would come in, he would sort of bluster bullshit for 30 minutes, then leave, and then we actually got down to the work with his deputy mayors, who were actually quite able people. But you know, I was kind of astounded that this guy had ended up as mayor of London. It's obviously 100 times even and more
much
astounding.
Less prime minister.
That he's prime minister, yeah.
I think the terrible thing about it, Henry, is this is a man with no ethics, with no standards.
And he's got born with a plum in his mouth. I mean, he went to private school and he talks rubbish most of the time.
Yeah, it's kind of mumbling bullshit. I mean, he did a speech before Christmas in the north of England to a sort of, you know, the Confederation of British Industry, where he waffled on.
Yes, I saw that. I think you put that on your timeline on Facebook.
Yeah, Peppa Pig.
Sorry.
I was going to say that it just led to just asking him after that, are you all right, Prime Minister? The rantings of a mentally unbalanced man, you know.
Listen, but
I'm wondering the consequences of. I mean, the biggest, most. I mean, the incredibly idiotic thing he did was to go after Europe and commit the Brexit, which I think, and I don't understand because I think it's slowly coming to the realization of Britain that it was a huge mistake because their economy, I mean, they've basically been shut out of an economic dynamo in Europe. And
it's a messy business.
Well, they previously were doing it because they resented the fact that Britain was losing its sovereignty to Europe, and there were lots of complaints about all these foreigners coming in and going to our universities and, you know, it's something like as though their sovereignty and their purity was being compromised by it. But I think now they're not doing too well economically in Britain, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact they're starting to realize that Brexit was a huge mistake, which I think it was. And then they have this goon running around, this idiot, this imbecile, blustering. And I'm speaking from the United States, where we've just previously had 4 years of a goon bluster.
And this is why we have you on this show. Ronan, you and I are Irish, but we both lived in London for a number of years. So what do you I've just actually seen, I think I'm correct about this, 60% of British people are very unhappy with Boris. As someone who lived in Britain, and you know, we both live there, what do you think, if you were living there, I mean, I already know what you think, but what do you think people who live there think about this? 60% disapproval rating is what I read. It could be wrong.
No, I think that's probably pretty accurate. I think a lot of people would be very angry. I mean, we've had you know, people coming out saying that you know, in the dates of these parties, that loved ones died alone in hospital because they couldn't visit them and they died of COVID.
Dreadful stories.
You know, people were suffering and really suffering through this horrible experience. And there was Boris, you know, breaking the rules and having parties. I think it probably disgusts many people. The Tory party, historically, has usually been pretty ruthless about this. You know, there's all stories of the men in the grey suits and the
Thatcherism. When we lived there, it was Thatcherism. I think it was for me anyway.
Yeah, but they've always, you know, when you know, they've always, if they feel it, the Tory party has always kept its core survival. and winning elections. And if they think that Boris is no longer the person who's going to win them elections and is just dragging the party down, they'll get rid of them. Now, the actual process for this is that 54 backbench Conservative members of Parliament have to submit their names to the backbench committee, which is known as the 1922 committee, calling for a leadership contest and the resignation of Boris Johnson. So if the 1922 committee gets this magic number of 54, then there'll be a sort of vote of confidence in Johnson and a ballot.
A vote of no confidence, he could, do you mean?
He could sneak a win, but we'd likely to be very severely damaged. And if that happened, we would likely then see certain members of the cabinet getting their knives sharp, and Rishi Sunak, who's the Chancellor of the Exchequer, he's been very quiet about this.
Strange.
The day that Boris Johnson was in Parliament having to apologise for this, Rishi was at an important engagement in Devon in the southwest of England and totally unavailable to comment. So he's on manoeuvres. The other candidate would probably be a lady called Liz Truss, a more strident probably Brexiter than Sunak, who's the foreign secretary. They're seeing
unfortunate.
Okay, look, we've only got 10 minutes left. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we've got a time delay here. Finally, I want to talk about Prince Andrew. Where do we start with that one?
I can't believe. I mean, the latest on Prince Andrew is that he appears to want to contest and actually have a civil trial.
Yes.
In relation
with his own money, he had to sell a mansion to pay for this. I do believe
he had to sell his Swiss chalet. Tragically for him,
we
know that he has been stripped of his charity patronages, his military roles, his Twitter account and website have been closed down. So he is essentially, I mean, you're seeing even in British newspaper headlines, disgraced. You know, Prince Andrew.
And the red tops in Britain are really. They're lethal people.
I read his defence and it was all full of, I could neither confirm or deny. And even denying that Ghislaine Maxwell was a close friend, which he self-evidently was. Everybody of a legal opinion that you would probably respect says he has to settle this. Now, it would cost him millions of dollars to do so. I think in the Queen's Platinum Jubilee year, to have Prince Andrew giving evidence and being cross-examined, and he's likely to be an absolutely goddamn awful witness given his car crash TV interview.
Yes.
Is just unthinkable. And of course it could lead in the event of Victoria winning his case to a much, much higher level of damages. Her lawyers say, and I believe this, that, you know, he made an allegation that he couldn't sweat. You know, they were in a nightclub and he was dancing and he was sweating.
What does that mean?
He has produced no medical evidence. They've asked for it to support that. He claimed the night in which Victoria said they met in Tramp's nightclub in London, they went back to this house where he was photographed by Jeffrey Epstein with Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yeah, walking in a park, I do believe. Oh, well, there was also the walking in the park thing.
This was Prince Andrew with his arm around Victoria.
Yes,
in a house.
Looking at it right now, yes.
And on a plane.
Where Victoria said that she was then compelled to have sex with Prince Andrew. And he claimed to have been in a pizzeria in Woking because his daughter was going to a party. That no evidence has been produced for that. You'd think it'd be a very matter for his royal.
We're running out of time here. I just wonder what's going to happen with this. I mean, you know...
You have to settle, Henry. A trial would just be a disaster.
Will it go on forever, though?
Well, he could make a settlement of probably around $5 million here. But lawyers for the court say that she's determined to have a trial. The royal family would be determined not to have one because it would just be absolutely horrific.
And you know, I feel very sorry. I feel very sorry for the Queen. I really do. Mm-hmm. He apparently was her favourite son. Now, just before we go, from an American's perspective, it seems to me, Thomas Booker, that the Americans are more obsessed with royalty than the British.
It's kind of a fan magazine preoccupation.
Yes.
Like, you know, it's sort of a, you know, a royal watchers. They have them over here. I don't know why, because, I mean, I guess it's because they haven't been teaching enough
American
history.
It's because America doesn't have its own royalty. They just got Hollywood.
We did for a while with Trump. Yeah, we had a totally corrupt and degrading. we may get that royalty back again. I mean, we may be losing our democracy here, but yes, I don't understand it, but there are people who are preoccupied. I think it goes back to Diana. I think Diana was the big tabloid draw, and there are so many people who still feel, it's not that they're feeling anything, any affinity or identification. It's just that it's a soap opera that they're used to watching, and now they're hooked on it. So now there's another figure popping up in it.
Okay, we have covered, I think, 6 subjects in this 1-hour interview, and I'm so pleased about that because I haven't spoken to you both for a long time. Thank you both for joining me here on Bondi Tunes.
It's good to catch up. Thank you, Henry.
The pleasure as always, Henry. Take care.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
It's a Broadway melody. The Broadway show OK, with music and lyrics by George and Ira Gershwin, opened on November 8, 1926, at Broadway's Imperial Theater, running for 256 performances. It starred Gertrude Lawrence, who introduced one of the brothers' best love songs, Someone to Watch Over Me. Now, Gershwin originally approached the song as an up-tempo jazz tune, but his brother Ira suggested that it might work much better as a ballad, and George ultimately agreed. It's been performed by numerous artists since its debut, and it's a jazz standard as well as a key work in the Great American Songbook. Dozens of recordings, including one in 1926 by Gertrude Lawrence, but the one I particularly like is by a singer who was once described by the Jazz Times as being blessed with arguably the most sterling set of pipes of her generation. Rarest of rarities, a chameleon who can blend into any background yet remain boldly distinctive. It's an exceptional gift, one shared by few others. Linda Ronstadt. And she does full justice to this Gershwin standard.
There's a saying old, says that love is blind. Still we're often told, seek and ye shall find. So I'm going to seek a certain lad I've had in mind. Looking everywhere, haven't found him yet. He's the big affair I cannot forget. Only man I ever think of with regret. I'd like to add his initial to my monogram. I'm a little lamb Kiss me once, then kiss me twice, then kiss me once again. It's been a long, long time. Haven't felt like this, my dear, since can't remember when. It's been a long, long time. You'll never know how many dreams I dreamed about you, or just how empty they all seemed without you. So kiss me once, then kiss me twice, kiss me once again. It's been a long, long time.
Henry O'Donovan.